Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
The announcement today is that schools will resume at the start of this school year. We're planning ahead. Superintendent Hoffman will release guidance for schools on Monday, June 1st. This guidance has been informed, of course, by school leaders, teachers, parents, and public health experts.
We originally voted to sine die in the Senate back on May 8th. We have had a number of conversations since May 8th. We need to focus on issues related to COVID-19 and what we can do to set Arizona up for success. Any other business other than COVID-related legislation is no longer a priority.
We're not limited or shouldn't be limited in what we're doing. Certainly COVID is the number one priority. It will be the focus in this state and in this country, or maybe the globe, for the next several months or years. We're not really sure. I don't think any of that will change. You can't put all other matters, though, on hold.
You actually have Senator McSally down by 10 points overall, including 20 points in Maricopa and 18 points in Pima County, which is very difficult to come back from.
And with us to talk about the governor's latest moves, the legislative session adjourning, and new polling on Arizona's U.S. Senate race are Chuck Coughlin, President and CEO of High Ground. Chuck, good morning.
Good morning, Steve and Laura.
And David Lujan, Director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. David, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And David, let me start with you. Let's start with what the governor had to say yesterday. As we know, coming up, we'll be talking to Kathy Hoffman ourselves next week, and the governor said she'll outline the plan. What did it mean to you to hear the governor say that students, at least some, are going to be in classrooms in a couple of months?
Well, I think there's still a lot of uncertainty. I think parents... some are anxious to have their kids go back to school, and I think there's going to be others that are not so anxious and will actually withhold their kids from going back to school. And then I think it's the question of what those classrooms will look like when they go back. And I think it's really going to shine a light on the two decades of disinvestments in our public schools, because I think those funding issues are really going to come to play when students come back to the classroom in the fall. When you talk about fewer students in the classroom, then that's going to require more teachers, more classroom aides. And we were already going through one of the biggest teacher shortage crisis in the country, and that's only going to exacerbate it. And then there's the whole issue of school facilities, which have been underfunded for years. And so, you know, all it will take is a broken down air conditioning system or a busted pipe to really throw school districts into disruption. And that could very likely happen, because schools have really been trying to walk the line without the funding for school facilities for a number of years. They've been underfunded to the tune of $2 billion over the past decade. And that's why there's actually a lawsuit right now. So a lot of questions. Yeah. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how it works out.
Chuck, does your pessimism come anywhere close to matching David's or no?
Well, he's certainly right about the investment situation in Arizona schools. The governor and the legislature have done what they have done over the last several years about the 20 by 20 program and increased teacher funding to some extent. But an overwhelming majority of Arizona voters still believe that investment in public education is down. Having said that, a majority of Arizona voters in our survey data show, hey, it's time to send these kids back to school. So there's a balancing act in all of this. And as the governor has tried to execute, I think he's done a pretty good job of that. We wanted to suppress the curve. And the question comes down to, you know, do we have hospital space to treat folks? Do we have that available? We're not going to get rid of the virus. It's not going away until we have some inoculative measure, which they're all working on. And so the question becomes a balancing act between the economy and the healthcare system. I know that sounds sort of macabre, but that's the reality of leading in these times.
David, let me ask you about something you mentioned there briefly. There is a big question here, as you're saying, about education funding, about attendance, if parents, students are willing to go back to school at this point. If attendance plunges, obviously, so does funding from the state. Are there solutions at hand for that? What would that potentially look like?
Yeah, and I know we're going to talk about potential special sessions, and this is a big one for school funding, and that is a couple of years ago, the legislature changed the way that school funding is based to the attendance, the number of pupils that are in the school for that current year. It used to be based on the prior school year. And so what will happen is that if at the beginning of the school year, you have a lot of parents maybe not comfortable in sending their kids back to school, enrollment's going to be down, which is going to mean less money for schools. And then those kids might come back later in the year when parents are more comfortable, but the schools are going to have less funding to fund those kids. And so what a number of schools across the state are asking is for the legislature to go back to the way it used to be a couple of years ago and base funding on enrollment as it was at the beginning of this year. And that's going to be a real critical issue as they look at special sessions to make sure that the funding is going to match what the schools need for next year.
Hey, Chuck, let me ask you about one of the polls that HighGround did, your firm. We're going to talk more about political polls later on in the program. But right now, I want to ask you about the one aspect of public activities that people feel good about returning to, let's say. And sort of in the middle of the pack is allowing children to go back to school. Definitely yes, 29.5%, probably yes, 22.5%. And the probably no and definitely no, it's certainly the total yes is winning. But the one thing is in the don't know, 14%. You look at movie theaters, the don't know is 1.8%. You look at dine-in restaurants, 0.5%. Let's talk about that as far as the concern that is still out there. And how does that affect what you expect to hear from Kathy Hoffman next week and what the governor seems to be pretty eager to get students back into school?
Well, there's a crosstab on that poll. We also asked that question of people with kids at home, which is really about a much smaller percentage of the electorate. And they were not surprisingly, overwhelmingly supportive. They were in the high 50s to 60s about, let's get these kids back to school. And as I made the comment, and David acknowledged, I think David would acknowledge this, that economy can't restart until we or get back to some semblance of normal until schools get back to some semblance of normal because of that. I mean, there's childcare, there's kids, there's and parents wanting to get back to their work. So, you know, I think there's a persuadable group there. There's also a bunch of people without kids that are answering that question. And so, you know, they don't know. So I think that's what that was they don't know because, hey, I don't have a kid at home. So I think what Kathy has worked very closely with the governor on this, so I give her credit on that for, you know, working not partly, you know, creating a partisan political issue here and understanding the economic and social reality of this. And so I think we have a giant persuadable group in there if they show a competent plan of making sure that the kids are safe when they safer. Again, we cannot eliminate all risk. That's not reality in life. There's risks every day. And so if they have confidence and they start the school year and they show progress on that, and if there is an outbreak, they deal with that quickly with contact tracing and the types of things that they can do in smaller environments, and they have access to healthcare and there's no surge in any healthcare institution. And, you know, this has also shown, you know, the data that we all have seen is kids are less likely to be infected by this. But then you have teachers and administrators and everybody that's around them all day. You know, we used to joke, right, that, you know, kids are like germ factories because they meet so many people every day in their social environments, much more than we do. And so it's something we have to watch, but we have to deal with that. That's the reality of it.
Yeah, I have a 2-year-old at home, and trust me, kids are germ factories. I want to turn back to you, David, quickly, because so students and parents are one part of this, but the other part of this, right, is teachers, like you mentioned there, and there's already a massive teacher shortage in the state that is ongoing. How do you think this could exacerbate that? Are teachers not going to feel confident going back as well?
Well, one of the things we've known for a while is that a lot of our teachers are nearing retirement age. I think it was like 25% of the teaching workforce in Arizona was within 5 years of retirement. So that means, you know, if you have older teachers who also happen to be in the higher risk area of getting COVID, And I think it gets back to what Chuck was saying. I agree. I think it's going to require confidence for people, and it's going to require confidence on the part of teachers to want to be able to go back to the classroom. And they're going to be looking to see what sort of, you know, precautions and procedures are in place to keep both students and teachers safe. And I think if they're not confident, you are going to see a number of teachers that are going to, you know, decide not to go back. Some will retire early. And that's just going to make our teacher shortage crisis that much worse.
Chuck, before we go to break, let's get into some of the politics of this. What did you make of the significance of what Governor Ducey had to say yesterday? Obviously, we're very focused on K-12 schools, which is obviously an extremely vital part of our communities in many ways. But even the idea of little leagues and other things, are we in a situation where the governor is just sort of deciding this needs to happen because we go back to that balance of the economy and health? Do you really think Dr. Karakrist is on board with this, or is this the governor being driven, saying, listen, it's just time to get revved up. The business community needs this.
Well, leadership's hard. I mean, particularly in situations like this. And so you have to balance a myriad of things that that we saw in our data that, you know, I was surprised in the data. We saw younger Democrats being overwhelmingly more cautious than the rest of the electorate. And we going, hey, let's get back to work, which was sort of surprising to me. But there's a balance there. And this is probably the first major crisis that those younger cohorts have seen. And so other people have experienced similar things, not anything like this. And so I think as they go back, the governor has to lead to get the economy going again. But you have to do it. You have to crack down on, you know, the Scottsdale bar scene that looks fairly ridiculous to the public, or other governors and beaches where, you know, there's mass congregations going on. Those aren't great ideas right now. And so, you know, as we go in, as we progress here, there's a phasing approach that the governor and Karakrist has outlined. And I think she's confident about that. I think she knows, you know, she's a cabinet level official. And there's other cabinet members that are part of this. I mean, transportation department, I don't think people have caught up with the fact that, hey, most of our repairs on most of our funding for roads comes from a gas tax. A lot of that comes from a gas tax. Well, guess what? The gas tax has plummeted because nobody's driving. So, you know, okay, you're not creating as many potholes, but the roads, particularly in rural Arizona, need a lot of repairing. So, you know, it's a balancing act with the things that you have to do as a leader. And it's tough. We had to do that, you know, when Governor Brewer at the bottom of the recession in 2009, you had a governor, you know, advocate for a sales tax increase. She had never advocated for a tax increase in her life, but she had to do that. She knew that the economy couldn't be solved, couldn't be restarted if we were just exhausting the state's economy by cutting expenditures. That's just not a reality. So, yeah. You know, she had to do tough things. The governor's having to do tough things now. And that's what life's about when in these crises.
David, we'll throw this to you quickly before a break. What do you make of this? What do you make of this balancing act that the governor is walking right now? Do you think that he's striking the right balance, or did the numbers bear this out?
Well, I think I've been saying that, you know, governor, other elected leaders, they can make the decisions to reopen government, but really the ones who are going to make those decisions are all of us, everyday people who are going to decide when they feel comfortable going out to eat, going to movies. And I mean, I think he is opening it up a little too soon. I think most of the country is opening too soon, but that will have to play out to see whether we see another spike in cases. And that's going to play into whether people are comfortable in going out. And I think, you know, so I think it's too soon, but I think it's ultimately going to be all of us who decide when we're comfortable and going back out and reliving our lives again.
It's the Friday Newscap on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein with Lauren Gilger. Our guests today, David Lujan, director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress, and Chuck Coughlin, president and CEO of High Ground. So, Chuck, we had a pretty abrupt end to the legislative session. The House had all sorts of bills they wanted the Senate to consider. Senate came back, three Republicans, and Lauren and I spoke with Heather Carter and also J.D. Mesnard to get their takes on what happened. What do you make of what happened in this session just sort of going away until we get a special?
Well, as we know, that there was a lot of agitation in the House of Representatives in the majority caucus to come back. The minority caucus was not in favor. There was a majority of the majority, for your listeners, that's a majority of the Republican caucus in the House, that wanted to come back. The Speaker, of course, didn't. So they came back for a few days. They passed a series of bills. I don't think anything truly remarkable there. And then sent them over to the Senate. They didn't pass anything related to bills that both the three senators who joined the Democrats in a signee die really cared about. I think those three senators were focused on a cancer presumption and protection bill for firefighters. That was not in the package. So as we see in legislative deliberations, hey, you're not doing what I want to do, so we're not going to be here. So that was, the president of the Senate, Senator Fan, was aware of that going in, those three senators were not going to be on board. I think it caught all of us a little bit by surprise. I had folks that work with me down here that were like, hey, this is unbelievable. And I said, it's not really unbelievable because, as I said, you know, it's all self-interest. It's all, you have to, when you're dealing with very narrow majorities, you have to do things for people down there. And several of those senators that I mentioned, Kate Brophy McGee, Heather Carter, they're in fairly competitive districts and they need to do things for their constituencies. And so they said, hey, you're not doing anything for me here, so we're going home. So I, you know, after an analysis by, you know, all the people here at iGround, we're like, yeah, that makes sense.
I want to toss this to you, David. Let's look forward a little bit to the special session now that this ended so abruptly. What do you think will be on the plate? We mentioned schools and some of the school funding models that are going to be looked at. What do you think economically might be considered?
Yeah, well, and I would start by saying probably special sessions. I think it's going to be more than one special session. I think it's starting to look more like 2009 when I was in the legislature. And I know Chuck remembers that year well. And it seemed like we were at Capitol for the entire year. It just was, I think we had five or six special sessions that year and we never went home. And I think, you know, you could see something like that because of the unknown economic situation. We still really don't have a good grasp on what the size of the budget shortfall is going to be. They're going to start getting more concrete revenue numbers in June, but you know, we've never been through an economic shutdown like this, and we don't know how quickly it's going to respond. So I could see those revenue projections changing, you know, a few times the rest of the year. So that could require the legislature to come back and forth to deal with a budget shortfall. But then I think other issues, other economic issues that they're going to look at is, as Heather Carter mentioned in your lead-in, just providing Arizonans who are struggling to put food on the table, you know, struggling to find a job, giving them the supports to get out of this economic crisis. So housing relief, unemployment relief, hopefully will be something they address because Arizona has the second lowest unemployment benefit in the country. And after the federal benefits go away on June 30th, it's going to drop down to that second lowest benefit. So
and David,
that housing, healthcare. So I think those are going to be some of the issues that they try to address.
David, what about that Federal CARES Act money? There was a little bit of controversy how the governor has handled that. Will some of that money be used in the way we're talking about?
It could. You know, there's different questions on what sort of strings are attached to it or what sort of restrictions and what the state can use. So I know, for example, there's over $1 billion that could go to the states to potentially balance, a state budget shortfall that was already provided in that first CARES relief. But there's some restrictions. And so what they're hoping is that Congress, when Congress comes back, that maybe they could remove some of those restrictions to give more flexibility. And then that could give the legislature more options with those federal dollars and how to use them.
All right, Chuck, what about you? What are your predictions for a special or several special sessions?
Yeah, David points out there's a component here that we all have to be watching is changes in federal law that then would comport changes in state law. So as those things mature on the federal level, there is an interest here in making sure those federal dollars go to the right place. There's generally federal dollars are the governor's discretion. but the legislature can step in if there's a majority of the legislature that wants to do that. Here becomes the problem that it's the governor is a caucus of one, and he has to call a session. So you have to have him agreeing as to what the legislature can discuss. And that's the most important caucus. And it's really easy to control a caucus of one. The next easiest caucus to control is the caucus in the Senate. There's 17 Republicans. And as we saw, that didn't really happen here recently. And so you got to get a majority of that caucus to agree on something that they want to discuss. And then there's a conversation. And because the majorities in both bodies are so close, there's also a conversation with the minority in both bodies. The speaker, on the other hand, probably has the most difficult challenge because he's got a majority of one vote. But he, as his speakership, has said, I'm not going to do anything unless there's a majority of my caucus agrees to do it. And he's lived by that admonition to his credit. He's been, and it's very difficult because there's many of those members in his caucus that are very conservative. I mean, down to the point where there was some discussion about admonishing the governor and, you know, repealing some of these executive orders. Well, that's not going to go anywhere, but that's what he has to deal with. So changes in federal law, governor calls the session, has to have agreement as with a majority of both caucuses and has to have a conversation with the minority caucuses, and then we'll get things going. Yeah. So I would say David's probably right. Economically, those things will address the federal changes in law. In state law, I've heard discussions that there's the gaming compacts for the Native American communities expire in 2024. There's a very big interest on their behalf to have those compacts extended. Those get negotiated with the governor, and then they get blessed by the legislature. That will be a difficult thing to do, but it's probably an economically important thing to do for those communities, and very important for the state. So there'll be a lot of economic activity that's being discussed and policy changes that will be articulated. Getting agreement on those is going to be very hard.
Chuck, our last few minutes, I want to stick with you, but briefly on this one, quick reaction, we get David's reaction as well. One of your polls at High Ground, I presume conducted by Paul Bentz, who, by the way, is a very snappy dresser when he's on the Friday newscast.
I didn't put my tux on today.
Formal Fridays.
Yeah, I'm in trouble today.
Yes, exactly. Well, so the numbers that came out had Mark Kelly leading 51-41 over Senator McSally and in Maricopa County leading by 20. Just for a brief, quick reaction to that, how surprising are those numbers? Not that Mark Kelly is ahead, but by that much.
Well, we also had the president, and the president was only down by, it was after his three worst months in office, he's only down by two in the state. So it's really good to watch. A lot of people were saying, well, you know, the president's dragging Senator McSally down. Well, that's not true. There's a couple things going on here. She's running probably against the most talented Democratic candidate in the country in terms of his bio and narrative. And then she has struggled to connect with certain constituencies. And she's also, and the Democrats have spent a lot of money pounding her. I mean, literally, we've all seen ads, right? That Martha McSally, blah, 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 blah. And so there's been a lot of that going on, particularly in this media market in Maricopa County. So she's struggling to connect with voters, those swing voters. She's not doing as well in rural Arizona, greater Arizona, as the president is. Mm-hmm. And both of them are not doing great in Maricopa County. So I would think we're going to see a concerted effort to improve those numbers with those constituencies between now and now in the general election. Because as we know, I think now Arizona is identified as a battleground state, mm-hmm. and the Senate is in play, and that's a big seat.
Yeah, Chuck, let's get David's reaction to that. So, David, let's focus on Maricopa County. We saw what Kyrsten Sinema did, and that has been a very tough county for Democrats over many years. Is that shifting to you?
It is shifting, and you know, I wonder, you know, what are President Trump and McSally going to run on? Because it was the economy, and now the economy is not something they can run on anymore. We have a pretty bad economy right now. And I remember I saw a tweet recently where Senator McSally said that this is all about, you know, making China pay or something like that. And I just think that's in Maricopa County or the rest of the state. That's not what Arizonans are caring about. They're caring about putting food on the table, getting jobs. It is about the economy, but that's probably not what they necessarily want to talk about now. So it's, I think they're in a difficult position. I think Mark Kelly is in a great position. He is a great candidate. And I think it's going to be very difficult for Senator McSally.
So that comes down to that balancing act where Democrats are more reluctant to open the economy. Republicans are more supportive of opening the economy. And there's a swing audience in the middle. So that's going to be part of the balancing act going forward here. You know, I've often said that it's not what Democrats do. It's really what Republicans don't do in terms of voting, you know, narrating a majority agenda. And it's hard to do. You know, I'm in the school of Will Rogers that, you know, when he said, you know, I'm not a member of an organized political party. I'm a Democrat. And so, you know, what I've always believed, it's not what Democrats do. It's what Republicans fail to do.
Yeah, I guess,
so
guys,
it'll be very interesting.
Just
it'll a few, be very just interesting to see.
Very few seconds left. Yes or no question. Martha McSally's autobiography, impact or no?
Yeah, I think so. If she could begin to identify more heartily on the stump. Yes. It's a hard thing to do, Steve, for a woman to talk about how she's been raped and how she's been abused and not come off as being, you know, playing that issue. But she didn't break through the glass ceiling. She used her, you know, she was bloodied through the glass ceiling.
David, yes or no on that? Does it make positive impact, negative, no impact?
No impact. They both have great stories. It's going to come down to the economy and what people feel like, who's going to do the most to help them get out of this economic crisis.
David Lujan's director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. Chuck Coughlin, president and CEO of High Ground. Guys, stay well. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.